This is Audible.
Audio Bookshelf presents Seed Folks by Paul Fleischman, performed by Multiple Voices.
Kim. I stood before our family altar. It was dawn. No one else in the apartment was awake. I stared at my father's photograph, his thin face stern, lips latched tight, his eyes peering permanently to the right. I was 9 years old, and still hoped that perhaps his eyes might move, might notice me. The candles and the incense sticks, lit the day before to mark his death anniversary, had burned out. The rice and meat offered him were gone. After the evening feast, past midnight, I'd been wakened by my mother's crying. My oldest sister had joined in. My own tears had then come as well, but for a different reason. I turned from the altar, tiptoed to the kitchen, and quietly drew a spoon from a drawer. I filled my lunch thermos with water and reached into our jar of dry lima beans. Then I walked outside to the street. The sidewalk was completely empty. It was Sunday, early in April. An icy wind teetered trash cans and turned my cheeks to marble. In Vietnam, we had no weather like that. Here in Cleveland, people call it spring. I walked half a block, then crossed the street and reached the vacant lot. I stood tall and scouted. No one was sleeping on the old couch in the middle. I never entered the lot before or wanted to. I did so now, picking my way between tires and trash bags. I nearly stepped on two rats gnawing and froze. Then I told myself that I must show my bravery. I continued farther and chose a spot far from the sidewalk and hidden from view by a rusty refrigerator. I had to keep my project safe. I took out my spoon and began to dig. The snow had melted, but the ground was hard. After much work, I finished one hole, then a second, then a third. I thought about how my mother and sister remembered my father, how they knew his face from every angle, and held in their fingers the fear of his hands. I had no such memories to cry over. I'd been born 8 months after he died. Worse, he had no memories of me. When his spirit hovered over our altar, did it even know who I was? I dug 6 holes. All his life in Vietnam, my father had been a farmer. Here, our apartment house had no yard. But in that vacant lot, he would see me. He would watch my beans break ground and spread, and would notice with pleasure their pods growing plump. He would see my patience and my hard work. I would show him that I could raise plants, as he had. I would show him that I was his daughter. My class had sprouted lima beans in paper cups the year before. I now placed the bean in each of the holes. I covered them up, pressing the soil down firmly with my fingertips. I opened my thermos and watered them all. And I vowed to myself that those beans would thrive.
Anna. I do love to sit and look out the window. Why do I need TV when I have 48 apartment windows to watch across the vacant lot and a sliver of Lake Erie? I've seen history out this window so much. I was 4 when we moved here in 1919. The fruit sellers' carts and coal wagons were pulled down the street by horses back then. I used to stand just here and watch the coal brought up by the handsome lad from Groza, the village my parents were born in. Gibb Street was mainly Romanians back then. It was addio, goodbye, in all the shops when you left. Then the Romanians started leaving. They weren't the first or the last. This has always been a working-class neighborhood. It's like a cheap hotel. You stay until you've got enough money to leave. A lot of Slovaks and Italians moved in next. Then Negro families in the Depression. Gibb Street became the line between the blacks and the whites. Like a border between countries. I watched it happen through this very window. I lived over in Cleveland Heights for 18 years. Then I moved back in to take care of my parents. That border moved too. Most all the whites left. Then the steel mills and factories closed, and everybody left, like rats. Buildings abandoned, men with no work drinking from 9 to 5 instead, down there in the lot. Always the sirens, people killing each other. Now I see families from Mexico and Cambodia and countries I don't know. 12 people sometimes in one apartment. New languages in the shops and on the street. These new people leave when they can. Like the others. I'm the only one staying. It's so. Staying and staring out this same window. This spring I looked out and I saw something strange. Down in the lot, a little black-haired girl, hiding behind that refrigerator. She was working at the dirt and looking around suspiciously all the time. Then I realized she was burying something. I never had children of my own, but I've seen enough in that lot to know she was mixed up in something she shouldn't be. And after 20 years typing for the parole department, I just about knew what she'd buried. Drugs, most likely, or money, or a gun. The next moment, she disappeared like a rabbit. I thought of calling up the police. Then I saw her there the next morning, and I decided I'd solve this case myself. We had a long spell of rain then. I didn't set eyes on her once. Then the weather turned warm, and I saw her twice more. Always in the morning, on her way to school. She was crouched down with her back to me, so I couldn't see just what she was doing. My curiosity was like a fever inside me. Then, one morning, she was there, glancing about, and she looked straight up at this window. I pulled my head back behind the curtain. I wasn't sure if she'd seen me. If she had, she wouldn't leave her treasure buried long. Then I knew I'd have to dig it up before she did. I waited an hour after she left. Then I took an old butter knife and my cane and hobbled down all 3 flights of stairs. I worked my way through that awful jungle of junk and finally came to her spot. I stooped down. It was wet there and easy digging. I hacked and dug, but didn't find anything, except for a large white bean. I tried a new spot, and found another, then a third. Then the truth of it slapped me full in the face. I said to myself, what have you done? Two beans had roots. I knew I'd done them harm. I felt like I'd read through her secret diary and had ripped out a page without meaning to. I laid those beans right back in the ground as gently as sleeping babies. Then I patted the soil as smooth as could be. The next morning, she was back. I peeked around the curtain. She didn't look up here or give any sign that she noticed something wrong. I could see her clearly this time. She reached a hand into her school bag. Then she pulled out a jar, unscrewed the lid, and poured out water onto the ground. That afternoon, I bought some binoculars.
Wendell, my phone doesn't ring much, which suits me fine. And that's how I got the news about our boy, shot dead like a dog in the street. And the word last year about my wife's car wreck. I can't hear a phone and not jerk inside. When Anna called, I was still asleep. Phone calls will wake me up at the worst. Get up here quick, she says. I live on the ground floor and watch out for her a little. We're the only white people left in the building. I ran up the stairs. I could tell it was serious. I prayed I wouldn't find her dead. When I got there, she looked perfectly fine. She dragged me over to the window. Look down there, she says. They're dying. What? I yell back. The plants, she says. I was mad. She gave me some binoculars and told me all about the Chinese girl. I found the plants and got them in focus. There's four of them in a row, still little. They were wilted, leaves flopped flat on the ground. What are they, she asked. Some kind of beans. And I grew up on a little farm in Kentucky. But she's planted them way too early. She's lucky those seeds even came up. But they did, says Anna, and it's up to us to save them. It was a weekend in May and hot. You'd have thought that those beans were hers. They needed water, especially in that heat. She said the girl hadn't come in 4 days. Sick, probably, or gone out of town. Anna twisted her ankle and couldn't manage the stairs. She pointed to a pitcher. Fill that up and soak 'em good, quick now. School janitors take too much bossing all week to listen to an extra helping on weekends. I stared at her one long moment, then took my time about filling the pitcher. I walked downstairs into the lot and found the girl's plants. You don't plant beans till the weather's hot. Then I saw what had kept her seeds from freezing. The refrigerator in front of them had bounced the sunlight back on the soil, heating it up like an oven. I bent down and gave the dirt a feel. It's hard-packed and light-colored. I studied the plants. Leaves shaped like spades in a deck of cards. Definitely beans. I scraped up a ring of dirt around the first plant to hold the water and any rain that fell. I picked up the pitcher and poured the water slowly. Then I heard something move and spun around. The girl was there, stone still 10 feet away, holding her own water jar. She hadn't seen me behind the refrigerator. She looked afraid for her life. Maybe she thought I'd jump up and grab her. I gave her a smile and showed her that I was just giving her plants some water. This made her eyes go even bigger. I stood up slowly and backed away. I smiled again. She watched me leave. We never spoke one word. I walked back there that evening and checked on the beans. They'd picked themselves up and were looking fine. I saw that she'd made a circle of dirt around the other three plants. Out of nowhere, the words from the Bible came into my head. And a child shall lead them. I didn't know why at first. Then I did. There's plenty about my life I can't change. Can't bring the dead back to life on this earth. Can't make the world loving and kind. Can't change myself into a millionaire, but a patch of ground in this trashy lot, I can change that. Can change it big. Better to put my time into that than moaning about the other all day. That little grammar school girl showed me that. The lot had buildings on three sides. I walked around and picked myself out a spot that wouldn't be shaded too much. I dragged the garbage off to the side and tossed out the biggest pieces of broken glass. I looked over my plot, squatted down, and fingered the soil a while. That Monday, I brought a shovel home from work.
Gonzalo, the older you are, the younger you get when you move to the United States. They don't teach you that equation in school. Big Brain Mr. Smooth, my 8th grade math teacher, hasn't even heard of it. It's not a gateway to algebra. It's Garcia's equation. I am the Garcia. 2 years after my father and I moved here from Guatemala, I could speak English. I learned it on the playground and watching lots of TV. Don't believe what people say. Cartoon make you smart. But my father, he worked all day in the kitchen with Mexican and Salvadorans. His English was worse than a kindergartner's. He would only buy food at the bodega down the block. Outside of there, he lowered his eyes and tried to get by on mumbles and smiles. He didn't want strangers to hear his mistakes, so he used me to make phone calls and to talk to the landlady and to buy things in stores where you had to use English. He got younger. I got older. Then my younger brother and mother and Tia Juan, her uncle, came north and joined us. Tia Juan was the oldest man in his pueblo, but here he became a little baby. He'd been a farmer, but here he couldn't work. He couldn't sit out in the plaza and talk. There aren't any plaza here. And if you sit out in public, some gang driving by might use you for target practice. He couldn't understand TV. So he wandered around the apartment all day, in and out of rooms, talking to himself, just like a kid in diapers. One morning, he wandered outside and down the street. My mother practically fainted. He doesn't speak Spanish, just in Indian language. I finally found him standing in the front of the beauty parlor, staring through the glass at a woman with a dryer over her head. He must have wondered what weird planet he moved to. I led him home, holding his hand the way you would with a 3-year-old. Since then, I'm supposed to babysit him after school. One afternoon, I was watching TV, getting smart on the Brady Bunch. Suddenly, I looked up. He was gone. I checked the holes on all 5 floors of the apartment house. I ran to the street. He wasn't in the bodega or the pawn shop. I called his name, imagining my mother's face when she found out he'd fallen through a manhole or been run over. I turned the corner, looking for the white straw hat he always wore. 2 blocks down, I spotted it. I flew down the sidewalk and found him standing in front of a vacant lot, making gestures to a man with a shovel. I took his hand, but he pulled me through the trash and into the lot. I recognized the man with the shovel. He was the janitor at my old school. He had a little garden planted. Different shades of green leaves were coming up in rows. Tia Juan was smiling and trying to tell him something. The man couldn't understand him and finally went back to digging. I turned Tia Juan around and led him home. That night, he told my mother all about it. She was the only one who could understand him. When she got home from work the next day, she asked me to take him back there. I did. He studied the sun, then the soil. He felt it, then smelt it, then actually tasted it. He chose a spot not too far from the sidewalk. Where my mother changed buses, she'd gone into a store and bought him a trowel and 4 packets of seeds. I cleared the trash. He turned the soil. I wish we were further from the street, and I was praying that none of my friends or girlfriends or enemies saw me. Tio Juan didn't even notice people. He was totally wrapped up in the work. He showed me exactly how far apart the rows should be and how deep. He couldn't read the words on the seed packets, but he knew from the pictures what seeds were inside. He poured them into his hand and smiled. He seemed to recognize them like old friends. Watching him carefully sprinkling them into the troughs he made, I realized that I didn't know anything about growing food and that he knew everything. I stared at his busy fingers, then his eyes. They were focused, not far away or confused. He changed from the baby back into a man.
Leona. Mama believed in doctors, but not Granny. Not even if they were black. No, ma'am. I grew up in her house back in Atlanta. She drank down a big cup of goldenrod tea every morning with a nutmeg floating in it, and declared she didn't need no other medicine. Dr. Bates tried to sell her his iron pills and told her straight out that that tea of hers would raise her blood pressure and burst her heart. He passed away that very same summer. Next doctor said it would give her brain fever. He died on his 50th birthday, I believe, right during the party. Had him a real nice funeral later. Granny lived to 99 by her count. She kept a scrapbook with the obituaries of all the doctors she outlived and could recite the list of names by heart like a chapter out of Genesis. We took to going to their funerals right regular over the years. She always laid some goldenrod on their graves. I was thinking about her one day walking home from the grocery store on Gibbs Street. Then I came to the vacant lot and saw 3 people in different parts of it. I thought maybe they were looking for money. Turned out they had shovels, not metal detectors. When I saw they had little gardens going, I said to myself, I believe I'll plant me a patch of goldenrod right here. There was a man standing and watching from the sidewalk and a girl looking down out a window. There were probably lots of folks who'd want to grow something, just like me. Then I studied all the trash on the ground. Don't know why anyone called that lot vacant. The garbage was piled high as your waist, some of it from the neighborhood, and some dropped off by outside people. The ones who don't want to pay at the dump, or got dangerous chemicals, or think we're such slobs down here, we won't mind another load of junk. We can't get City Hall to pick up our trash, but we got it delivered just fine. The smell's enough to curl up a crocodile's nose, especially in the summer. The gardeners had made some trails through it, but I knew precious few would be joining them until that mess was hauled away. Looking at it, I knew this wasn't a job for no wheelbarrow. This was a job for the telephone. I marched on home. I got 2 kids in a high school that has more guns than books, so I know all about complaining to officials and such about things that need changing. Next morning was Monday. At 9 o'clock, I drank me a tall glass of water.
I knew I'd be having to say the same thing to 15 or 20 government folks. I put miles on the CD player and stretched out on the bed. Might as well be comfortable when you're on hold. Then I opened the phone book and started in dialing. You ever watch a sax player close? They push down a key, and way at the other end of the instrument, something moves. That's what I was looking for, the key that would make that trash disappear. I tried the city of Cleveland, then Cuyahoga County, then the state of Ohio, and finally the U.S. government. 6.5 hours later, I found out the lot was owned by the city. But the people running Cleveland don't usually come down here unless they take a wrong turn on the freeway. You can't measure the distance between my block and City Hall in miles. Just the same, I kept working on it the next day. The Citizens Information Center told me to call the Public Health Department. They sent me to someone else. They're all trained to be slippery as snakes and to be out to lunch, to not return messages, and to keep folks on hold till they get gray and die. I had the feeling I was getting farther from the key I needed instead of closer. Then, on the third day, I thought on it. When people talk to you on the phone, you're nothing but a voice. And when you're on hold, you're not even that. I had to make myself real to them. That morning, I took a bus downtown and walked into the public health department. Told about the trash all over again to this dolled-up receptionist. Let her see me up close and personal and hear me loud and clear. She just told me to sit down with the others waiting. I did. Then I opened the garbage bag I'd picked up in the lot on my way. The smell that came out of it made you think of hog pens and maggots and kitchen scraps from back when Nixon was president. It was amazing how quick people noticed it, including that receptionist. And even more amazing how quick I was called in to have a meeting with someone. I was definitely real to him now. I brought that bag along with me into the meeting to keep it that way.
Sam. I saw people on the sidewalk, watching something. I crossed to join them, like a cat who smells herring. Men in jumpsuits, from the jail, I think, were clearing the lot. Unbelievable. The woman beside me told me the land was for anyone who wanted a garden. Even more unbelievable. The word paradise came out of my mouth without thinking. The woman looked at me strange. It's a hobby with me, studying words. I looked at the three walls surrounding the lot, then at a garden coming up beautiful, planted there, close to the sidewalk. Paradise comes from a Persian word. It means walled park. I told the woman that. This time she gave me a little smile. I smiled back. That's my occupation. You've seen fishermen mending the rips in their nets. That's what I do, only with people. I used to try to patch up the whole world. For 36 years I worked for different groups, promoting world government, setting up conferences on pacifism, raising money, stuffing envelopes. Not that I've given up the fight. I've just switched battlefields from the entire planet to this corner of Cleveland. Sometimes I think I've actually had more effect on the world since I retired. What do? I smile at people, especially black people and the ones from different countries. I get them looking up at me instead of down or off to the side. I start up conversations in lines and on the bus and with cashiers. People see I'm friendly, no matter what they've heard about whites or Jews. If I'm lucky, I get them talking to each other. sewing up the rips in the neighborhood. I haven't had a garden since I was a kid. I wanted one now, only this time I was 78 to be exact, and in no condition to dig up the soil. So I hired a teenager, Puerto Rican, who said he knew where he could get a shovel. He knew he'd have to do a good job to be paid. He worked that soil until it flowed through your fingers like silk. I paid him well and offered him a row. He wanted to grow marijuana to sell. A real businessman. We discussed this. We finally compromised on pumpkins after I explained how much he could probably get for them at Halloween, not to mention the advantages of staying out of jail. He was new to the neighborhood. We chatted back and forth, squatting there in the cool of the evening, planting our seeds, a few other people working, a robin singing out strong all the while. It seemed to me that we were in truth, in paradise, a small Garden of Eden. In the Bible, though, there's a river in Eden. Here, we had none. Not even a spigot anywhere close by. Nothing. People had to lug their own water in buckets or milk jugs or soda containers. Water is heavy as bricks, trust me. And new seeds have to be always moist. And in all of June, it didn't rain but 4 days. The result? People bent over like coolies, walking sometimes 3 or 4 blocks, a gallon jug in each hand, complaining all the time about the water. Mine? I had hauled by a third grader with a wagon. The contest I started came later. Water aside, we had other problems. People in the garden told friends and relatives. The lot was big. There was plenty of room. But when newcomers joined, at least at the beginning, they could usually get a spot near people they knew. One Saturday, when the garden was fullest, I stood up a minute to straighten my back. And what did I see? With a few exceptions, the blacks on one side, the whites on another, the Central Americans and Asians toward the back. The garden was a copy of the neighborhood. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. A duck gives birth to a duckling, not a moose. Each group kept to itself, spoke its own language, and grew its own special crops. One man even put up a pole and flew the Philippine flag above his plot. Then there was the garbage. A few well-brought-up people in the buildings around the lot still used it for a trash can. Just couldn't get out of the habit. They emptied their ashtrays out the windows and tossed out all sorts of stuff. One day, a bottle came down like a meteor. A man picked it up and threw it back straight through the window it came out of. A minute later, 5 more flew out. Next, I thought to myself, come gunshots. Instead, thank God, it was only shouting. That crazy homeless man, the one who used to sleep on the broken-down couch, he also missed the lot being a dump. He showed up, saw his couch had been taken, and started ripping out people's plants. The police had to come. Some people started worrying, looking ahead to ripe beans and tomatoes and thinking about strangers coming in. That week, a man put chicken wire around his garden 5 feet high, complete with a little gate and padlock. The week after that, someone built a board fence. Then came the first "Keep Out" sign. Then, the crowning achievement, barbed wire. God, who made Eden, also wrecked the Tower of Babel by dividing people. From paradise, the garden was turning back into Cleveland.
Virgil. My father, he always has a smile on his face and a plan moving in his head. We were standing together on the sidewalk while the men were clearing the lot. I was watching the rats running for their lives. They were shooting off in every which way. A couple of dealers came over, the ones always bragging about how bad they are. A rat ran right up one of their legs. The dude screamed, just like women do with a mouse in cartoons, only louder. Shook his leg like his toes being electrocuted. That rat flew off and dove down the storm drain. I looked at my father. That's when I saw he hadn't paid the rat any mind. Hadn't even turned his head. His eyes were stuck completely on the garden land being uncovered. He had a 2-foot-wide smile on his face. My father drove a bus back in Haiti. Here, he drives a taxi. That night, he drove himself way across town to borrow 2 shovels from a friend of his. The next morning was the first day without school. I was done with 5th grade forever. I'd planned on sleeping till noon to celebrate. But when it was still half dark, my father shook my shoulder. School was over, but that garden was just starting. We walked down and picked out a place to dig up. The ground was packed so hard, the tip of my shovel bounced off like a pogo stick. We tried 3 spots till we found one we liked. Then we walked back and forth, picking out broken glass like chickens pecking seeds. After that, we turned the soil. We were always digging up more trash, bolts and screws and pieces of brick. That's how I found the locket. It was shaped like a heart and covered with rust with a broken chain. I got it open. Inside was this tiny photo of a girl. She was white with a sad-looking face. She had on this hat with flowers on it. I don't know why I kept it, instead of tossing it on our trash pile. It seemed like hours and hours before we had the ground finished. We rested a while. Then my father asked if I was ready. I thought he meant ready to plant our seeds. But instead, we turned another square of ground. Then another after that, then 3 more after that. My father hadn't been smiling to himself about some little garden. He was thinking of a farm to make money. I've seen a package of seeds for pole beans and hoped that's what would grow. They get so tall that the man in the picture was picking them way at the top of the ladder. But my father said, no. He was always asking people in his cab about how to get rich. One of them told him that fancy restaurants paid lots of money for this baby lettuce, smaller than the regular kind, to use in rich folks' salads. The fresher it was, the higher the price. My father planned to pick it and then race it right over in his cab, running red lights if he had to. Lettuce seeds are smaller than sand. I felt embarrassed planting so much ground. No one else's garden was 1/4 the size of ours. Suddenly, I saw Miss Fleck. I hardly recognized her in jeans. She was the strictest teacher in Ohio. I had her for 3rd grade. She pronounced every letter and every word and expected you to talk the same way. She was tall and even blacker than my father. No slouching in your seat in her class, but any kind of rudeness. The other teachers seemed afraid of her, too. She walked over just when we finished planting. Well, Virgil, she said, you seem to have claimed quite a large plantation here. That's just what I was afraid of hearing. I looked away from her, down at her sticks. We put them in the ground and run strings around them, cutting our land up into 6 pieces. I didn't know why till my father stepped forward. Actually, madam, only this very first area here is ours, he said. He had on his biggest smile. He must have remembered her. The others we have planted at the request of relatives who have no tools or who live too far. Really now, said Miss Fleck. Yes, madam, said my father. He pointed at the closest squares of land. My brother, Antoine. My auntie, Anne-Marie. My eyes opened wide. They both lived in Haiti. I stared at my father, but he just kept smiling. His finger pointed farther to the left. My Uncle Fleep. He lived in New York. My wife's father. He died last year. And her sister. My mother didn't have any sisters. I looked at my father's smiling face. I've never watched an adult lie before. What did your extended family of gardeners ask you to plant? Said Miss Fleck. Lettuce, said my father. All lettuce. What a coincidence, she said back. She just stood and walked over to her own garden. I'm pretty sure she didn't believe him. But what principal could she send them to? That lettuce was like having a new baby in the family, and I was like its mother. I watered it in the morning if my father was still out driving. It was supposed to come up in 7 days, but it didn't. My father couldn't figure out why. Neither of us knew anything about plants. This wrinkled old man in a straw hat tried to show me something when I poured out the water. He spoke some language, but it sure wasn't English. I didn't get what he was babbling about till lettuce finally came up in wavy lines and bunches instead of straight rows. I'd washed the seeds out of their places. The minute it came up, it started to wilt. It was like a baby always crying for its milk. I got sick of hauling bottles of water in a shopping cart, like I was some old lady. Then the heat came. The leaves shriveled up. Some turned yellow. That lettuce was dying. My father practically cried looking at it. He stopped buying his cab when he could, with 2 5-gallon water containers, riding in the back instead of passengers. Then bugs started eating big holes in the plants. I couldn't see anyone buying them from us. My father had promised we'd make enough money to buy me an 18-speed bike. I was counting on it. I already told my friends. My father asked all his passengers what to do. His cab was like a library for him. Finally, one of them told him that spring or fall was the time to grow lettuce, that the summer was too hot for it. My father wasn't smiling when he told us. I couldn't believe it. I stomped outside. I could feel that 18-speed slipping away. I was used to seeing kids lying and making mistakes, but not grown-ups. I was mad at my father. Then, I sort of felt sorry for him. That night, I pulled out the locket. I opened it up and looked at the picture. We studied Greek myths in school that year.